We're missing a good, yeah, there we go. Good afternoon, welcome. We're going to get started. Our members are coming in, and we're just going to get started because everyone has to get back to the things that are happening on the floor today. So, I don't know who would like to start things off. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Welcome.
The Chair of the Metropolitan Court Facility Commission has arrived.
Okay, and so you have some stuff for us, is that right?
That's correct.
We have a number of things, so you can tell us what we're looking at.
Let's pack it. I'll let the Chair really get started.
Okay.
Madam
Welcome.
Chair, good afternoon. My apologies for being tardy for a meeting that's been, we've been waiting for.
Well, I think we've put you guys off a few times.
Well, I shouldn't have
stepped
out of the room at the wrong time. So anyway, thank you for the opportunity to be here and to begin this conversation. For the record, I'm Roy Schwilliger, Chair of the Sports Facilities Commission. With me, Bill Lester, Executive Director of the Sports Facilities Commission. We are also accompanied by some other people today who we'll be introducing at the appropriate time. But it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for this time. We are really, with our presentation we had before with the Senate a couple of weeks ago before the Senate Tax Committee, and with this visit here today, the intent really is to talk about the art of the possible, what and lay out what the timetables are, to talk about the needs that we have in Minnesota for a statewide public facility that has a retractable roof that will give us the continuing privilege of being able to have a large-scale venue to take care of events that we've been accustomed to over the years, such as statewide high school playoffs that can go on, the state soccer playoffs that go on, Billy Graham Crusade, the Promise Keepers, Monster Truck Jams, just all types of things that, as a public, we've become accustomed to. At the same time, the art of the possible here is determined a little bit by the sense of urgency that we feel when our major tenant, the Vikings, when we look at the fact that their use agreement in the current facility expires at the end of the 2011 football playing season. As everybody knows, of course, the Twins baseball park is proceeding and about to begin construction. The Gopher football stadium will begin shortly after that. And then we have the fact confronting us that we're going to be down to the one major tenant. And they are a very important major tenant, not only to the facility, but to the state as an asset across this whole entire region. And certainly we're concerned about the next generation of sports fans and what we do to make certain that we plan and think, exchange ideas, and talk about the need and the sense of timing that's here. If we are able to begin this discussion today with just the idea that we are here to make you aware of all the work that's been done by the various planning groups. We engaged a group out of California called the Roma Group, a design planning firm that laid out before us, after months of study, a vision for the 20-acre site where the Metrodome currently sits. Along with them, we've had about another dozen consultants that have been looking at all aspects of trying to find what is really the art of the possible and what the facility will look like, how it fits into the downtown east area of Minneapolis, how it fits in from a transportation standpoint, how it melds together with the surrounding neighborhood, and most importantly, do this in a way that is open and has a lot of discussion and interchange of ideas, because nobody has a solution, I don't think, for all the various aspects of a project like this that will be complicated and as well as costly. And situation is very similar to what we had 30 years ago when the Metrodome was being contemplated, and at that time I point out that the Twins and Vikings had played in Metropolitan Stadium in Bloomington for about 25 years when the Metrodome opened, or about 20 years, so this facility has been in existence for the use of the Vikings and the Twins longer than the old Metropolitan Stadium was for the Twins and the Vikings. You know, I would hope you and maybe it'd work best if we could hold our questions until we get through with the presentation, and then we'd be able to direct your questions to the people who have the most knowledge of the specific question you have, if that would work well, Madam Chair.
Well, in general, we let people ask questions, but we'll see how it goes.
Obviously, it's your choice, but the only reason I was suggesting that would just be the fact that as a question you might ask myself or Mr. Lester might be better answered by one of the other people who are going to be participating up here because of their degree of expertise. Not that Mr. Lester doesn't have the expertise, it's just that the person talking is not the one. I would have to call upon one of them to probably answer it anyway. So, but
and we can always bring
if it's
up
a question that's burning, that's really burning, why obviously we'd appreciate it to interrupt it. I'm going to turn this over to Bill Lester, who's been an executive director of the Sports Facilities Commission since 1987, through two World Series, through two Final Fours of the NCAA, through a Super Bowl, many regional Final Fours, and has seen a lot of events come and go, has a great deal of expertise and experience, and we're very pleased that we have him as one of the leading employees of the state of Minnesota. Bill?
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Welcome, Mr. Lester. And can you, before you start, we have a lot of stuff in front of us. You need to tell us what you're looking at, so we are looking at it, too.
Madam Chair, members, you don't have to look at any of that. That's the takeaway for later. I don't think you have to look at or find a single thing for this presentation, but it's your takeaway from this, so you'll have the information that we present.
So nothing you're presenting is in here?
Yeah, but it's in fuller detail in there, so there's more background. But we're not going to ask you to find any specific items. You're fine for
okay.
just following
well,
the
just
policy.
So you know, this committee likes detail.
Oh, okay. So. We'll have ample detail. Plus, we do have the full report that we produced for the commission in April, and we'll assure you that I think the full report is in there. If not, we'll get that to in the backup materials to support all that.
Okay.
Madam Chair, do you have a time certain that you want to finish this by?
I don't. No.
Okay.
We're on the floor at 4:30, caucus.
All of them.
Rep. Lanning or Earhart, does anyone know when you have a caucus?
5:00.
Okay. Now I'll be fine, Madam Chair. Remember. Thanks. We're going to walk through this. The other two people we have assisting us are Craig Stein, who's the principal with CSL, and they're a national and international authority on finance, on facility finance, both convention centers, sports, and leisure. And we're fortunate they're headquartered here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, not in Minneapolis. And then Bruce Chamberlain is an architect with Hoisington Kogler Group, and you'll also hear from him. In 2006, we began the potential development of the Metrodome site, including the construction of a new stadium. And so we met with neighborhood groups, we met with all the appropriate stakeholders, and the objective here is to examine what would be possible that would keep the team in Minnesota, not just through the 2011 contract term, but for the next 30 years as well. Having the team allows you to have the facility. Having the facility allows you to maximize it and get the best return for the community. So we engaged a large number of consultants. We're not going to go through all of them. People with expertise in various aspects of not just stadium development, but the area as well. And one of the primary things, we were looking for a multi-purpose stadium with a retractable roof because of the benefits that confers on the state and all of the various communities. And that includes the high school football teams from Moorhead. That includes all of the people from around the state who have used this as the community's rec room. The historic costs and benefits of the stadium developments in this community was consideration, historic costs and benefits of professional sports franchises in this community. All of these materials in ample detail are contained in the report, and we're not going to bludgeon you to death with all of those numbers, although you will see some in a few minutes. We also looked at the cost of redevelopment of the site, and we looked at the direct and indirect benefits of redeveloping the existing site. More than 77 million people have visited the Metrodome since it opened in 1982. When the chairman lists all his signature events that we've been able to host, he always leaves out Marilyn Manson and Ozzy Osbourne. I don't know why that is. He listens to their music on a daily basis. We're the only stadium to have hosted an NFL Super Bowl, the All-Star Game, two Major League Baseball World Series, and two Division I men's Final Four basketball championships. The availability of a year-round facility to accommodate the wide range of sporting, entertainment, commercial, civic, and community activities is an important contributor to our quality of life. We've been able to do some things with a new twin stadium opening up, open air, a new University of Minnesota Gopher football stadium, open air. This is our last chance, our best chance for this next generation to have a climate-controlled, large-capacity venue to host these wonderful events. I should tell you that the Metrodome is used on approximately 300 days a year. 100 of those days are the 10 Viking football games, the 6 to 7 Gopher football games, the 81 baseball games. The other roughly 200 days are monster truck jams, high school playoffs, football, girls soccer, boys soccer, all high school football. One of the premier opportunities was the famous October 31st, 1991 storm, which would have brought an end to the football playoffs, but we were able to move the entire playoff into the Metrodome because we had an option for that type of activity. Professional sports leagues and teams are the current Metrodome no longer satisfies the needs. And those of you who have seen the XL Energy Center, and nearly everyone has, you can see what is available in terms of amenities and modern facilities, which is, of course, drives their costs up. But wider concourses, restrooms, facilities, especially for women, and plus wide seats, state-of-the-art, all of the audio-video things that you see in a modern facility. The ability of the Metrodome today to provide these benefits is limited. We've put money into it. It was built, as you'll recall, there were $55 million in bonds, plus another roughly $32 million in infrastructure, so roughly an $87 million cost to build it. It was approved in 1977. The legislature created the Sports Facilities Commission, and it opened for business in the spring of 1982. Of the 31 NFL teams in the country, the Metrodome is the oldest that is not in the process of being replaced or fundamentally renovated. All the teams that the Vikings play against in the NFC North are in new or renovated stadiums. And with the exception of New Orleans, all of the dome stadiums of that generation have been replaced, stadiums such as the Pontiac Silverdome, the Kingdome, and the RCA Dome. So basically, you boil it down to three options. The status quo, to stay the same, which is not really an option because of the team's use agreement expiring at the end of 2011. A major refurbishment. We looked at that once about 7 years ago. We're going to bring up the date after your session is over. We are going to do another analysis, bringing that up to date, looking at what the existing program that we would require would cost and impact and whether or not you could actually do that. And a new facility. And a significant advantage of the current site, and this is one we can't overemphasize, is the existing infrastructure. All those roadways, access ramps, surface streets, parking ramps, the LRT line, which exists in the station existing adjacent to the stadium, will be joined, if everything works, by the central corridor, which will connect at that point. All of this infrastructure is in, it's operating, it's paid for or being paid for, the way to maximize the public's return on that infrastructure is to use it during the non-peak time. It's used on weekends for these large capacities, crowds, and it's simply taking advantage of an existing investment. We did do an analysis of how much a new stadium would cost, and with a retractable roof, it would be approximately $954 million. I should say that the team will also, Mr. Bagley will speak on behalf of the team, with their reaction to the work we've done thus far. The team doesn't require the retractable roof, but the rest of us require the retractable roof. The team can play open air, but I think the team recognizes, should recognize, that having the team allows us to have the facility, and we need a retractable roof and a climate-controlled facility if we're going to maximize the return for the community. The redevelopment of the Metrodome site will positively impact development in the downtown east. Here's the breakdown of the cost, and Madam Chair, in the materials you'll see a full breakdown of the cost that make up each of these various components, a total project cost of about $954 million. This does not include cost for additional development adjacent to the methadone.
Excuse me, Mr. Lester, can you tell me where that is in the, you said it's in the materials, the breakdown of that financing that you just showed? Where is that?
Is it in this?
Yes. It's in this one? Not this one.
It's in the cover letter, Madam.
Cover letter? I have two of those.
Of course. You're looking for the breakdown of the saving cost?
You just had a, can you go back on your PowerPoint there?
Sure.
That went pretty fast. Okay, so you said that there, that's in our info, and it was it with more detail?
Yeah, it is. Madam Chair, if I could ask, I'll finish mine, and then I'll get to that, if that would be all right with you. I don't have this right here.
Go ahead, I'll follow.
So do you, okay. Are you saying it's not, we don't have it? We're all looking for it, but...
Okay,
Oh, okay. Well, I think that's, so there's no more detail than what's up there on the screen? I'm not seeing that. I thought you said that there's more detail in the packet. I don't see it.
But what I'm not positive about, Madam Chair, is if it's in your packet. If it is not...
This, I think we found this PowerPoint slide in the packet, but nothing beyond that. Most members have found something else. Okay, well, we'll keep... Mr. Lester, if you want to keep going, and if the next...
If it's not in that packet that you have, then I'll get the breakdown of each of the components that make it up.
Okay, because just in general, the tax committee cares most about the money.
All right.
So that's the focus of what we want to spend our time on. Okay, thank you.
I appreciate that. The stadium plan, I'm going to get into this in more detail with Mr. Chamberlain, and so, but roughly there'll be 144,000 square feet of public plaza space in front of the new facility. And I should say the question that always comes up is the development did not occur around the Metrodome. And it's important to remember, I think, that it did not. In fact, one of the neighbors at a meeting we had said, it was as if the Metrodome was plunked down in 1979 and like a giant spaceship and destroyed all indigenous life around it, which is a great quote. But in this case, there were no drivers to it. And unless it's integrated into an overall concept, a strategic plan for development of an area, a stadium will not in and of itself generate or promote development. But if there are other drivers, and in this case, we do have multiple drivers, as you'll see, the Winter Garden, which is the LRT station, we'll see that. The plaza is one. The fact that there's a developer who's interested in investing significantly in this area are additional drivers, plus the stadium, that will promote a development we anticipate in this area. The benefits of redeveloping the site are significantly enhanced if not done in conjunction with the Selection Master developer, and that is what the Wolf family, we think, believes would add to this particular site in this particular area. The Roma Design Group was selected from a national group, search, and we found four really premier national design, urban design firms, plus four local ones. And the Roma Design Group was particularly important to us because they did the work around San Diego Petco Stadium, where the Padres play, and the development and redevelopment that has occurred around that area has been significant, and a catalyst being, and that is baseball, which is 81 games versus football, which is 10. But it is analogous because it's a sports facility that is one of the drivers around that area. A second place that they worked is AT&T Park, where San Francisco Giants play in the China Basin area of San Francisco, which also experienced, they did the master planning for this area. What we asked them to do is look at the city's existing adopted master plan for Downtown East and to build on that plan, and you'll see the work that they came up with. Our conclusions were as follows, that the redevelopment of this site delivers the most benefits, it's cost comparable to other projects, and other options are not feasible or cost prohibitive. It creates benefits beyond the stadium site, and it enables us to design a solution for the next 30 years, not simply for the 2011, and addresses what we perceive to be an urgent need to get this in place before the Vikings use agreement expires. The talk schedule is next, and it's also in your report, and anticipating an opening of in the fall of 2012 for that football season, we would really look and need approval during the 2008 legislative session if we are going to, in fact, meet that objective. The cost of stadiums is rising. You'll hear a bit about that. This chart shows New York, which is, of course, in a universe all its own, $1.7 billion. And it shows some of these other numbers for which Craig is going to explain. I'd like to now introduce Craig Stein of CSL, who will present information on the costs and also other aspects of the finances for new facilities.
Thank you, Mr. Lester.
Thank you. For the record, please state your name.
I will do that. I am Craig Stein. I am with CSL International. Members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be in front of you this afternoon. What I'd like to do is spend a little bit of time to talk about stadium financing and some of the other projects that have been financed around the country in order to give some perspective to this particular situation. We're not here to talk about how you're going to do this or how it should be funded, but rather what have others done, what techniques have been used, what portion of those dollars has largely been privately funded and what has been publicly funded. I'll also go into a few case studies of some other retractable roof facilities. The chart you see in front of you first starts with three primary columns in terms of the shaded columns. One is the total project cost, then the portion that is privately financed and the portion that is publicly financed in each of those different scenarios. And there's two things in this chart that you see as you focus in on it. It lists all the projects or stadium projects that have been built or opened since 1997, or in the case of Lucas Oil and the Cowboys, are under construction at this time. In addition to that, into the future, we will add the Giants Stadium in New York, and also the San Francisco 49ers if they continue forward with their project. But if you break the total cost column down into three primary segments, if you look from 1997 up to about 1999, you'll see the projects were in the $200 million to $300 million range. As you move from the year 2000 up to 2002, you'll see they kind of fell into the $400 to $500 million range. And now moving from 2003 forward, you see some $5 million, $6 million, and indeed the Cowboys at the $900 million project cost. Mr. Lester referred to a chart earlier that showed the context of this facility at $954, and it certainly falls within the context of the Cowboys project and the escalated cost of these other projects. The other thing you'll note here on this chart is, and I'll show it to you more graphically in the next two slides, is there really is no public-private formula, though. It really bounces all over the board. You see some that are almost all publicly financed and a few that were very heavily privately financed, and we'll go through that. If you look at the next slide, you can see the breakdown by dollars of these different projects. And if you look at the two colors, you'll see in kind of the gray color the private portion of funding, and you'll see in the dark blue the public portion. And again, you can see how that ranges across the board. If you look at the Cowboys at the top, it's close to a 50-50 split. If you were to look at the Indianapolis Colts, which is in 2008 going to open, you can see by far the vast majority was public funds at $575 million and $100 million of private funds. So what you find over time is the trend of cost, unfortunately, has continued to go up. These facilities are costing more to complete, and as time goes by, those costs have continued to escalate. But in terms of how are they funded, it still varies around the board. If you look at another slide that represents that, you can see it by percentage participation. What percent of the total project cost was private, what percent was public. Again, the private dollars in kind of the light gray, or percentage in the public in the dark blue. As I mentioned, the Cowboys in a 50-50 range. If you go all the way down to the second from the bottom, you see the Tampa Bay, which was basically publicly financed. If you go about two-thirds of the way up, you'd see the New England Patriots, which was largely privately financed. So each of these financing is really a market-based financing. It depends on the size of the facility or the size of the market, the economic attributes of that market, competition, and all of those different considerations. The next slide shows a more detailed breakdown of the same sort of information and drills down a little further. It takes the total project cost again. It talks about the public-private, and then it shows the primary sources of public funding. And if you take the top analysis there, which is the Cowboys Stadium, which I'm going to go into in a little bit more detail in the next slide, but you can see there are various taxes used. But if you go through each of these different charts and you focus on the public funding portion, you see primarily sales tax, hotel tax, rental car taxes, and then you see several unique taxes. There are different types of revenue participation. If you go down to the bottom of the chart, Reliance Stadium, which is in Houston, there was a sales tax rebate on all in-stadium generated taxes. If you look at Quest Field, at the very top of that chart, you can see in the primary sources some state lottery proceeds that went to that project. So any number of different sources have been used. What I'd like to do is take three particular projects and just show you some of the differences and some of the similarities between these various projects. And I'll start with the Cowboys project, which is one of the latest projects to be under construction. To be opened in 2009 is what's anticipated. Again, you can see on the chart on the right, the private funding portion about 51%, the public 49%. You see the breakdown on the pie chart. But if we again focus on the public funding, you see a half-cent sales tax, a 2% hotel-motel tax, a 5% car rental, and some parking and admissions taxes. So that's how that was accomplished. On the private side, it's either equity, it's some sort of sharing of vendor funding, or in some cases it's permanent seat license, or PSLs as they're referred to, as well as participation by the NFL through what historically has been referred to as a G3 program. If we go to the Indianapolis Colts situation, you see a different breakdown. You see an 85% public, 15% private, $100 million coming from the team, $575 million largely from the public sector. This is really a state-initiated project, but what that allowed was that for the project to collect taxes on a countywide basis, again using hotel, motel, rental car, admissions, and then there is a six-county 1% incremental restaurant tax. And then, of course, the sale of Colts license plates, which has gone up appreciably after their latest victory. You go to the final slide here, and it's the project in Phoenix, which was the new Phoenix Stadium for the Arizona Cardinals. Here you see a participation 68-32 split. You see, again, rental car tax, hotel motel tax, sales tax recapture, i.e. Sales tax is generated in the stadium, rebated back to help fund the project. And then again, the private funding coming on behalf of the Cardinals. If you just did a quick overview of the various public sources that have been used in all of these projects that I've shown you on these charts, you can see the various sources. And again, this is not to say what should be done, but this is what has been done. These are the types of vehicles that have been used to the level they're necessary in each of these projects to help support the public funding portion. City sales tax, county sales tax, lodging taxes, income taxes, utility taxes, it really runs the whole gamut, as well as other types of things involving rebates, sales of properties, and other types of developments. So that's an overview of project funding, how these other projects have been done. Again, costs have escalated. Local market conditions really have dictated the public-private percentage breakdowns, and there's been a variety of different ways that those different funds have come to bear.
Mr. Scone, I think we'll stop here because Representative Marquardt has a question.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I think when we're talking finances and so forth, I think there's a couple questions here. I see on the back of this that was passed out, we're talking about two factors drive us to push this conversation forward with all possible speed. And it's mentioned that even if we act today, the very best scenario is so forth in that. My first question is, you're not assuming that we're going to be putting a package together by Monday, are you? The end of session? Mr. Terwilliger or whoever?
No, that this is an informational opportunity for us to get the word to you, but we're really looking at 2008 to begin serious discussion of this. So the sense of urgency is what we would like to make everybody aware of, that we do need to begin the planning as soon as we can.
Madam Chair, Mr. Terwilliger or whoever, then, are the costs that you that we see here on the fifth page, which is $953 million, are those based on what you would assume costs to be next year when you start construction, or are those based on 2007? Because certainly if you're anticipating 2008, And you can add 10% to this if you're waiting another year. And you mentioned, you know, we need to move quicker, costs escalate, and so forth. So when you look at these numbers, $953 million, are they based on today's construction numbers, or would it be based on something next year into the future?
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, those are 2012 construction numbers.
Okay.
There is an escalation to early 2010 construction start. At that point, they would be in a position of, I assume, buying materials and getting things set aside. But we're talking about an inflation factor there of some significance.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Sure.
Of course, last year we just went through a Minnesota Twins debate and a Gopher Stadium debate, and it always came down to the public side of things as far as the dollars, and you know, a lot of different options were mentioned. And you know, this year we're, you know, trying to find dollars for property tax relief and all of these things. And I guess the fact that this is information, but the legislature and the tax committee, we're going to need to be thinking about this until next year. What are you going to be asking the state for? I mean, how much is going to be private funding? How much, what percent of the project will be public funding? And then what would you look at? Would you look at general sales tax exemptions? Are you looking at a local option sales tax? Or, I mean, what would you, I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, because that's going to come down to what we're really going to know to make this work, is there's going to be a lot of discussion on how we, if we do put any public financing into this, how do we do that? What would you look at a scenario for the public side, and how much would you anticipate the public side to be? What percent of the project?
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, it's an excellent question, and I'm certainly not trying to avoid it, because we all know those numbers are big, and we all understand all the priorities that everybody in this legislative body is confronted with, and all the pressures and demands that are all the way from the local level to the state level. We have, however, come here today without a financing plan in place which would lay out those specific numbers. The Vikings have talked a time or two in media about what their number might be as far as their contribution. As you know, the possibilities are many. Mr. Skyen listed the public sources of sports facilities funding that have been used across the country and all the other facilities. And it is going to take some hard work to sit down and some people who say this is the art of the doable, this isn't, this is the practical nature of the beast. And we hope that by the time we're here next year, through this interim, that there will be the opportunity for input from all sides as to what the most appropriate level of funding would be from the team, what the type of financing assistance may be available from whatever level of government.
I guess just one final question.
Sure, right.
I'm sure if I could. So well, I appreciate that. Thank you. And if we, you, on the last page of the letter, you said even if we act today, the best case scenario would be for a new stadium by 2012. If we were to start, let's say, in 2008, could you still do it in 2012? Because I know the last year on the agreement is 2011, and I think we're already maybe possibly looking at least one year where you would have, the Vikings would have to look at playing in an alternative site. So what is it 4 year time frame, and maybe that's going to be covered next?
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I think the thought here is we need to begin today talking about this, and the time is soon for us to do that. We would anticipate the 2008 legislative session would address the specifics of this. We are anticipating, and the university has indicated a willingness to work with everybody concerned here, that they will be able to host the Viking games during those probably 2010, 11, and possibly even into 12, but there's a planning time frame in there and a construction time frame, and Bill Lester perhaps should comment a little more specifically on that.
Madam Chair, Representative, this anticipates opening kickoff of 2012. The budgeting and the financial information is predicated on that. We do think they will have to play in an alternative site, and we've had preliminary discussions with the University of Minnesota for playing two seasons there and then return in 2012 to open up the new place.
Madam Chair, I guess. Sure. Just coming back one more time to the financing, is there a rough idea of a what would be the private-public share? I mean, has there been any numbers floated out there as far as what the owner of the Vikings would be willing to spend?
Madam Chair, Representative Markwart, you know, to sit here and say roughly what it would be is, would really be preliminary for me to say that, because we've not had those discussions. We've not sat down and actually looked at the various factors that are going into that. Whatever number I would say would be probably incorrect. And I'm not trying to be, avoid your question. I mean, this is one of the reasons we need to engage the policymakers, you and your fellow colleagues, in this discussion, because out of this discussion is going to come what those numbers may well be.
Well,
I should mention when Bill and Craig and the next witness, Bruce, finish their discussions, I'm going to ask Lester Bagley's Minnesota Vikings to join me at the table as well.
Okay.
All right. Well, to your point, Representative Lester.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and for any of the testifiers. As I listen to this and I hear some of the speculation about what would be the appropriate level of team participation, and hence vis-a-vis that, what would be the appropriate level of state participation, I think that there is some argument made by using that terminology that the state does have some role in participating, I guess if you will, or investing in something like a professional sports franchise, which is similar to what we've done with the Twins. But I'm wondering if you can tell me if you think that there are other industries or businesses that warrant this type of quote-unquote participation.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, one thing I would like to preface my comment here with is the fact that the Sports Facility was Sports Facilities Commission was created by this body, by the legislature, to retain professional football and baseball in Minnesota. As such, we were given the charge, the responsibility to retain that, plus oversee the facilities necessary for them to do so. We own 20 acres of land in downtown Minneapolis. We're looking at what's the most responsible thing to do with that. So in a sense, we already have the public participation in that form that it's been there. But we also have the dual charge of retaining professional football and baseball in Minnesota. So we are, in a sense, I believe, since we're created by this body, coming back to you saying, okay, as our parent, you know, what is the appropriate direction to go now? And that's really what we come with today, is that question.
Senator Glass?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Williger. And I understand that. It may be that the answer to my question is, well, none. No other businesses or industries. But if that's the case, then I understand that. I understand that that's your role as this commission. But I just want to hear that as the answer, if in fact that is the answer.
Mr. Turniger.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I could sit here and give you my personal opinion as what where it's at, and I could make all kinds of comments across the board about what the role of, as a person who was here for 11 years, there was always this discussion, what is the appropriate role of government in that, in any type of assistance or whatever. This is a different entity than many of the businesses, and there are some of the most profitable corporations in this state who have received assistance either at the local, county, or state level. What is the appropriate role of this type of a asset? You know, what type of intangible ownership is there on the part of the public in this? And, you know, my feeling is that if we want to retain professional sports in the state, that we, from a competitive standpoint vis-a-vis the other metropolitan areas across the country, are going to have to have some assistance role in this to be able to enhance it in a small market community to be able to allow us to continue.
Well, Representative Black.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't ask another question or the question again, but I guess I never think it's too early to begin having that conversation when we're having policy discussions like this, so I just wanted to bring it up.
Representative Lanning.
So thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if we're going to cover this later, but in light of the questions that have been asked so far, I think it would be helpful if you would talk about current ownership of the site, the facility, what the site facility is currently worth, and what future ownership might be. I think some people in the public feel that maybe the Vikings would own this facility. I don't think that's the intent. So I think it would be helpful if you could comment about current ownership, current value, ownership under some future deal should a new stadium be built.
Mr. Chairman.
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, the Metropolitan Sports Facility Commission created by this body does own that 20 acres of real estate in downtown Minneapolis. It is anticipated in what we're talking about here that we would continue as a landlord to reuse that space for a future multi-purpose public facility. So we would in fact continue on in that capacity. The cost of the land, what the value of the land is right now, I'm going to ask Bill Lester to comment on that.
Mr. Lester.
Madam Chair, Representative, the value of the land is a function of what kind of development takes place on it. So the 20 acres itself wouldn't be able to establish because that would be replaced with a new facility, it would be rotated. I think, Madam Chair, if I could ask the indulgence of Representative Lanning, if we can go through the to see how this works on the site and surrounding site, and then let's come back and take another whack at that question, that would be all right.
That's fine with me, but I was given instruction about an hour, so we're looking at 3:30.
Okay.
So
we will proceed.
Less people. Okay.
Bruce is an architect in Minneapolis, and during the last time he appeared before a legislative body, his wife gave birth to a bouncing baby boy. So if you just thought he can replicate that, we appreciate it. Well, he wouldn't appreciate it. Not that quick. Bruce is with Lightning and Sogler, and we'll talk about the vision and site itself.
Thanks, Bill. Bruce Chamberlain, Vice President, Urban Designer with Hoisink and Kobler Group in Minneapolis. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. I think this image that shows the Metrodome in relation to the downtown speaks volumes about the situation and the relationship that the current stadium has. Mr. Terwilliger mentioned the 20-acre site that's currently owned by the Sports Facilities Commission. Very much the idea of the vision for a new stadium in this area is to take advantage and really recycle that land for a new stadium and take advantage of the investment that was made decades ago for the current Metrodome, not only in the land itself, but the infrastructure that was created to access it. So all the transportation infrastructure that's around the Metrodome to access this site, as well as the 25,000 or so structured parking spaces that are within walking distance of the current Metrodome. We certainly want to be able to take advantage of that, and that weighed heavily in our look at how this new stadium could be created. The suggestion for the new stadium is essentially to place the new stadium on the current Metrodome site in a different configuration, different location within the site, but very much use that land that's in place. The new vision for multi-use stadium expands the visitor experience beyond the stadium walls, which I think is really the current situation. Those of you know who have gone to a game or gone to an event at the current Metrodome, the experience really doesn't start until you get through the airlock doors into the Metrodome and get into the stadium. We want to try and change that, expand the visitor and the fan experience beyond the walls of the new stadium, and really make this a district-wide experience and event for people to go to. The new stadium is on the same land, as I mentioned. It shifted in location, moved a little bit to the east, and the stadium itself is reoriented. Today it orients essentially north-south. The new stadium would be reoriented toward the downtown to take advantage of the downtown skyline. very similar to what the Gophers and the Twin Stadiums are doing with that incredible asset of the downtown skyline. We wanted to do that with this stadium as well. The new stadium takes advantage of not only the freeway infrastructure that was built, as I mentioned, decades ago, but also the newer investment of LRT. The Central Corridor and the Hiawatha Corridor LRT lines merge, come together at the stadium station, the area right here at the stadium. In addition to that, the North Star line is coming from the north, and the Southwest Corridor ultimately will be coming from the Minnetonka area to meet at the new Twin Stadium, which again has direct LRT linkage to this stadium. So the infrastructure array obviously has expanded from the Metrodome situation to take advantage of new public infrastructure, public transit that's being built. This is a view from the downtown area toward the new stadium. The vision is for a retractable roof and retractable wall stadium that opens up toward the downtown skyline. There's a suggestion for an event plaza at the foreground to the stadium. So again, rather than the experience starting at the walls to the stadium itself, to really expand that to the exterior as well, creating this event plaza that not only functions for events and games in the stadium, but becomes an amenity for the area around it as well. This is really a one-of-a-kind opportunity for creating a very special LRT station. As Bill mentioned, the possibility of other drivers that really become extremely important in making the stadium work. And one of those, we think, is creating a really tremendous experience with arriving in this district via LRT. The suggestion is to create an interior LRT station area where there would be restaurants, cafes, linkage to an adjacent development, as well as the platform area for the LRT station. This obviously leverages in-place transit investments and also serves the fans and the visitors to this area from a district-wide standpoint. The interior view, if you're in the stadium and have the advantage of looking through the retractable wall of the stadium, really creates a world-class view of the downtown skyline from what would be a state-of-the-art stadium, housing football as well as the other events that Bill talked about. Climate controlled, obviously, and would accommodate the football and the other events in the Metrodome. We've got a fly-through also that I'm going to pull up quickly.
Mr. Trittinger, while we have a break here, I'm a freshman to this committee, and I'm not up to speed on past plans, programs. You had something for a while, at least in the news, on Anoka. Is that now gone or out? Can you comment on that? And then second question would be, you know, you are talking about infrastructure here, whether it's the Central Corridor, North Star Line, etc. I'm not personally sure of where that funding is going to be or not be, so is this plan dependent on that or independent? Can you comment on that? Those two questions.
Madam Chair, your first question I would like to defer until ask Officer Bagley to join me up here from the Vikings. He can comment on the Anoka situation. As far as the this plan, it is not dependent. The light rail Hiawatha line already comes by there. The,
sure.
The two interstates actually intersect right near the Metrodome. So that is in place. It's not dependent upon any changes in infrastructure. What could possibly be added, of course, is the central line that would come across from St. Paul to Minneapolis. It would intersect and join together right at the side of the current Metrodome.
I understand that. The question I'm asking you, is it dependent or independent? Is your plan dependent or independent of that?
Independent, ma'am.
Thank you.
I'll proceed with the fly-through, which shows the new stadium in relation to the surrounding area. Obviously, looking toward downtown with a stadium in the foreground, Mississippi River on the right. You can see the event plaza at the foreground of the stadium, which becomes a really important amenity for what's happening on the interior of the stadium as well. Winter Garden Transit Station is directly now in front of the plaza space. The suggestion is for really making that, as LRT becomes more prominent, an important feature in arrival to the stadium. The new Guthrie is at the foreground right now, overlooking the riverfront, looking down Chicago Avenue. You can see that by pushing the stadium to the east, there's opportunity for, to create the plaza as well as some development flanking the plaza adjacent to the stadium. So that's our very preliminary vision of what this new stadium could be, using the existing infrastructure and existing site. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chamberlain. Any questions from the members?
Madam Chair, if
I'm sorry, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if, since the Twins have an open-air stadium, would this be convertible to baseball in April and May and September and October?
Madam Chair.
Sure.
Representative Earhart. This will not. It's the function of modern professional sports and ticket sales and season ticket sales. This will not be able to house the Twins during inclement weather. But if in the design phase of this, if we actually got approval and were able to build it, I personally would think it would be very important to build in the capacity to play baseball. You don't have to have deep crowds or have private suites for it, but the thousands of games we play every year that begin at 8 o'clock in the morning when we get the Pequot Lakes Legion team, when we get people coming in and playing in and using it all the time, I'd like to be able to continue that tradition if we could. It will not be compatible for use by the Twins.
Madam Chair, one other question.
Sure.
The 20,000 parking places that you have are going to go away to some degree, if not a lot, if you do development around there. What's the additional plans for when they disappear into a building or other buildings?
Yes, Mr. Lester.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, these Vikings have a program element of 2,500 parking spaces adjacent or contiguous. Part of that, we're going to make that their existing ramp structure parking exists. For example, there's a 455 place ramp underneath the LRT station now. There's a BTC. There's a number of buildings around there that have it. Plus, you'll note all of the parking for the roughly 160,000 people who work in Minneapolis every day are not used on Sundays. And the 20,000 within walking distance is probably pretty generous on our part. Some of them are a little further away. It is true, Madam Chair, Representative, that we're losing a lot of surface parking. But there's ample structure parking that's going to be able to accommodate this or any other activity that we have.
Madam Chair, let me add one additional comment here as well on the LRT. Right now, with just the one line coming in, there are about 12,000 rides on a Sunday. Obviously, 6,000 to 6,000 from, but it is used, so that's nearly 10% of the capacity of the current Metrodome. So that, add the other corridor in, add the North Star Rail in, it even increases that.
Representative Carlson? I'm sorry. Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just a question. I was here when they debated for some time the building of the current stadium. And my question is headed towards the development around it. And I still remember if we built a $50 million stadium, and there would be $300 million in development around the stadium. And that never really happened. So my question is, how firm is this commitment that there would in fact be the economic development that's a big selling point as part of the new stadium?
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, it's an excellent question. I'm going to ask Bill to comment on it. And in addition, I think some of that gets into the future development around the this particular area where there is quite a bit of open space, as you point out, and the Vikings ownership, current Viking ownership, the Wells family, do have a background in development, and so it's a little bit different of a situation than it was at that time. But Bill, you want to comment?
Madam Chair, Representative, I didn't mention this before, but I think it's prior to your arrival, but what the Metrodome was, it was thought at that time that if you plunk this down, development would naturally occur around it. That will not happen. But without a comprehensive strategic plan for what will happen, that includes multiple drivers, not just the stadium plunk it and they will come because it won't happen. But if you have multiple drivers, such as a willing partner who's willing to risk a significant amount of money in that development, if you have an area of the city, the downtown east, which has an adopted master plan existing, if you have a winter garden and the transit hub that will occur, if you have the parks that Mr. Chamberlain talked about that would also be an amenity, the multiple drivers will take advantage of the time the market is ready to expand, to achieve it. It's teed up as the next appropriate or probable place where development will occur. So I think that, the error we always try to stay away from before is trying to promise that development will occur, because it's false. It won't occur unless you have multiple drivers. And then I think it's more appropriate for the Vikings to talk about their commitment.
Okay.
That may be an accurate description of so many years ago. I thought it was a development plan, but that was part of the argument for doing it. But maybe that's an accurate portrayal of the built-in stadium that would come.
Madam Chair, Representative, you were about 12 years old and I was about 11 years old that year that happened. I remember that.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Lester Bagley. I'm Vice President of Public Affairs and Stadium Development for the Minnesota Vikings. I appreciate the opportunity to make just a few brief comments this afternoon. First, we certainly applaud the efforts of the Sports Commission and their work to solve this problem, and we are anxious to move the discussion forward with state and local leaders. We believe the Sports Commission has taken the critical first step in toward solving the long-term solution for the Vikings and our fans in the state of Minnesota. As Chairman Twilliger outlined, the Sports Commission is the public agency in Minnesota that's charged with representing the public's interests in stadium discussions, and their arguments today have underscored the statewide benefits of a new multi-use stadium as well as the urgency in which we need to act. The Commission's report answers key questions and provides a vision of what's possible on the Metrodome site as part of a broader redevelopment of the downtown east area of Minneapolis, and the Commission did an excellent job of developing the best and most workable approach to this problem, and they defined a plan that makes the new facility the anchor of a broader economic development package for the region. We also want to make clear to the committee this afternoon why the Vikings organization and ownership agree that the Metrodome site is the best location to construct a new multi-use stadium. Over the last couple of years, we've heard from fans, corporate leaders, sponsors, and Minnesotans in significant numbers that their strong preference for a new facility is the Metrodome site. Most importantly, though, as the Sports Commission has detailed, this site's existing freeways, light rail, both current Hiawatha line and the future Central Corridor line that will connect here, and the existing utilities and other infrastructure make this the most cost-efficient site in the state for a new facility. And as noted, as parking and tailgating opportunities near the dome are disappearing each year, there are still 20,000 parking spots within a quarter-mile walk of the site. Plus, as we speak, the Vikings are working on creating opportunities along the Hiawatha light rail line for a Vikings-branded tailgate experience, kind of a park and ride, where we would take over a parking operation and brand it as a Viking experience, market it to our ticket holders, and try to provide a game day experience, which is so important to our fans. So we're working on that right now to try to make the best of the current situation and really expand our parking and tailgating opportunities along the light rail line. And when Central Corridor opens, those opportunities will only expand. So we're confident that with the parking situation, that we can work with the parking situation at this site. So we agree strongly with the Metrodome, with the Sports Commission's conclusion that the Metrodome site should be recycled, and that this is the best location for the next generation of Vikings footballers, as well as a great number of other community and athletic events that have been discussed this afternoon. Our final point this afternoon is that the Sports Commission to resolving the stadium issues matches up with the Vikings and the Wilf ownership approach, and that is, it's an investment approach. And since the Wilf first purchased the Vikings, they've expressed a strong interest in investing in our economy and being part of redeveloping the area around the Metrodome. We have a tremendous opportunity here to solve this facility issue and generate hundreds of millions of dollars of private money from the Wilf ownership into a new multi-use stadium and a broader economic development package that will create jobs and tax base and provide an economic boost to our state's economy. So, and also since taking over stewardship of the Viking franchise, the Wilf have made it clear that they will contribute their fair share to resolving the state's long-standing stadium or facility issue. So thank you again for the opportunity to come before you today. We're appreciative that the legislature agrees that this is worthy of a discussion and hopefully can move this issue forward. The Sports Commission has laid out a tremendous vision and an opportunity and a solid approach to the solution, and we appreciate their leadership. We're also looking forward to rolling up our sleeves, working with you and the governor and the public and other levels of government to try to arrive at the best decision for the state of Minnesota and as well as the Vikings and our fans. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Bagley, and I want to first, I apologize, I had to leave, and I just want to, I know that this isn't very important, but what's more important to the legislature now is the state budget, and I just want to inform my colleagues while we transition back, and I think Representative Wolfsager for running the meeting, that the governor and Senate Majority Leader Pogonor and Senator Clark and Speaker Kelleher and Representative Sertich and Senator Benjamin and Representative Seifert are diligently working on the budget right now, and they called the tax chairs over, so I apologize, and they are very close, so that's good. So I apologize for that, and I do want to, if I may, before I forget, I want to accept Representative Earhart's motion to approve the minutes of May 15th and May 16th. Yeah. Discussion to the minutes. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. And I understand that Representative Wolfsager had a question for you, Mr. Bagley, and was waiting for you to come up, so you're here now. So, Representative Wolfsager.
Yeah, Mr. Bagley, I'm a freshman here, so I obviously was not paying attention as much as I could have in previous years. And I just, the last I thought, where the Vikings were, you were in Anoka. So, I mean, if you can just help me out, figure out.
Mr. Bagley.
Sure. Madam Chair.
In Norway? Oh, I'm, you know, now I've been told you started in Norway, but we're a little sleep deprived here, so, you know, humor helps.
Mr. Bagley.
Madam Chair, Representative Wolfsager, good question, and I did allude to the infrastructure advantages to the Minneapolis site, but just a comment on the Anoka situation and discussion. We couldn't have asked for a better partner in Anoka County. We worked very hard, and they worked very hard to try to make something work up there. We have a great respect for the people of Anoka County and the public officials that we worked with, but we weren't able to make it work. I think we gave it 100% effort. I think the numbers that we laid out today by the Sports Commission are very significant. Those numbers in Anoka County, especially the infrastructure costs, are several hundred million higher than they are in this site. So I tried to focus my comments on why the Minneapolis or why the Metrodome site is the best site, is the most cost efficient site for a new facility, and that's I think a response to those questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bagley. If I may, and I again missed what you already may have answered. I don't know. I just today on the floor, somebody was asking me, you know, about this hearing, and another legislator asked me about the money that Anoka invested in originally trying to be a partner with the Vikings, and I don't know what that number is. I heard it was a lot. They were just wondering, and I'm going to just ask it for them. Is there anybody who's going to try to sort of compensate those folks who brought a lot of money to the table and then feel, I won't speak for them, but I think, you know, they feel that they were kind of left hanging. Can you respond to that, because I know that this is not, the legislator who asked me about it is not the only one who feels that way, and I think since we've got a public opportunity to address it, we should. Mr. Bagley.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I don't necessarily have an answer or a solution. I don't know what the level of dollars. I think that they would have to ask the folks from Anoka what they put into the effort. We certainly expended a lot of energy and resources, and again, 100% effort to try to make it happen. Prior to that, we spent a lot of energy and resources in trying to make a Vikings Gopher Stadium project work on the University of Minnesota campus, and that didn't work either. So we've now come full circle and kind of back to where we started, which is the Metrodome site. So I can tell you how we got here, but I can't tell you I have an answer for that question.
Mr. Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to ask you about financing. Maybe it's too early in the game, but there must be some equities involved in the present Metrodome. What happens to those, and have you developed a financing plan yet?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, we are at the early stages here of talking about this. We've not developed the financing plan will be developed as we proceed with these discussions with policymakers and people across the state. We have plans once the legislative session is finished here and such, and proceeding in these next few months, to have what I would title as listening visits around the state. We will make everybody here aware of that. We'll be bringing that in. And if you're questioning, if I'm looking for my financial statements in this quarter, but we do have some resources in-house that the total ending account balances as of 12/31/06, $17,182,000. Our various account balances that we have.
Up in their heart.
Plus, of course, the asset of the land.
Well, Madam Chair, does the stadium have a value now? I mean, is there a value on the stadium now? Or?
Mr. Twilliger, Mr. Fletcher.
Madam Chair, Representative, the replacement value is going to be carried for insurance purposes. Is that what you're
right?
So there is a replacement value for what it would cost to replace it exactly as is. I forget what that number is, but I can get that for you.
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to kind of figure out Sports Facilities Commission has I think I got the right name on that. Has an asset there, and what happens to the value of that asset as we move on? But maybe that's premature as well.
Madam Chair, I believe it is premature at this point. We, you know, obviously the land, 20 acres of land, and what is the continuing use of that land obviously determines the value.
You say, Madam Chair, you pay property taxes? No.
Okay. Madam Chair, no, we're a public entity.
Representative Simpson and Wolfwager than Broad. Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, Representative Earhart, it's a liability because landfill costs are a lot. This is probably a question for the tax chair. I believe in House File 2268, which is parked somewhere. We have Section 15, which consists of a Minnesota Football Stadium Task Force. Could you tell me, Madam Speaker, Madam Chair, what's going to happen to that?
You know, first of all, you were characterizing the next tax bill as parked somewhere is accurate. It is parked somewhere. I think it's at the desk in the House, and no one's sure what's going to happen and how that's going to be brought forward. We're still hoping that everybody negotiating is going to have a resolution, and then we'll have the conference committee do the final tax bill. But there is a study, and honestly, I'll tell you that maybe these folks know better than I. Senator Bach really, really wanted me to agree to that study, and I did. And I think it's no surprise to anybody here that I am not a fan of public subsidy for any stadium anywhere. So no surprises there. I think what the language is five from the House, five from the Senate, and five from the public. And we'll see if that survives the end of the session. But Senator Bach is very interested, and he would like to have some folks begin to look at it. Certainly my objective in the House would be to have a very balanced set of legislators, not just those who are advocates of public subsidies for stadiums. Representative Simpson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that I'm glad to see the Vikings people here today. I think they're opening the door for the future. Minnesota is about a future. And I think this task force is part of what we need to do so that we have a broad base of people that are involved in this on the early on, like from the get-go, and I'd like to see this continue. So I will probably encourage that. In the meantime, I would like to be excused because I have sixth graders that drove 3.5 hours to get here. So
top priority. Thank you, Representative Simpson. Representative Wolfire.
Mr. Bagley, before you came up to the table, we were talking about this public-private split, and the Cowboys were mentioned with the 50-50 split, the Colts were mentioned with 85% public, 15% private, Tampa Bay was mentioned as mostly public, New England was mentioned mostly private. I mean, this is a tax committee. Could you help out at least me and say where you're at?
Mr. Bagman.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Walshauer, thanks for the question. We look forward to getting into that discussion with members of the committee and if there is a stadium task force, kind of zero in on that. But I think a couple points on the question: one, that the building will be publicly owned and used as has been noted for a great number of events. I think it's instructive to look at the Twins model or other NFL stadiums, NFL cities in similar markets or similar size markets throughout the country. And I think in each case, it's always a difficult problem and an intense debate and really a different solution. But the one thing that is in common in every solution has been some level of public-private partnership that has moved this project forward. So I think we look forward to getting into those specifics. I think our ownership has expressed the willingness to put significant dollars into both the stadium as well as the private development surrounding the stadium, investing in our economy, investing in a solution, and we're ready to have that discussion in more detail.
Representative Brock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just in response to Representative Walshauer's comment, I would caution us a little bit to be too tied into the percentages, because if I recall the discussion from before, what is deemed to be public is different in each one of those situations, whether it's seat licenses or whether it's naming rights or whether it's all sorts of those things. I think each one of the stadiums that you'll get a percentage from views those things differently. Some might view the seat licenses as the public participation, and others might view them as the private participation. So I think we should just be a little careful with those percentages. But my question, Madam Chair, is I think for Mr. Bagley, I'm trying to remember what the title was, but the NFL had a program in place to help participate or to help teams move toward building stadiums. And I'm wondering, it was my understanding that money was going away. I'm wondering, is it still out there? Is there any hope for regeneration of that, if it is?
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, it's called the G3 funding proposal, or funding program to the league. The fund has been exhausted. The Giants, Jets, I believe the Kansas City deals have exhausted the fund, but there has been a willingness and at least a commitment from the commissioner of the NFL that this is an important issue. There are a couple of communities remaining to resolve issues. There's been participation by the league all along, and there's a need to keep the league healthy and the economics healthy. So there's an interest by the commissioner in moving that project forward and having some league program. The other important point to note is that it's a loan program. It's a loan that the owners of the Vikings would be on the hook for in terms of repaying if there's a default. So it is the G3, or if we're fortunate to evolve another program that's similar through the league, It'll be a similar loan program that'll be part of the private contribution, if you will, toward or private investment toward our facility.
Representative Lanning, then Atkins, and Earhart. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to get back to a question I asked when you were out of the room, and that has to do with the ownership issue. I think too many people are seeing this whole proposal as something only for the sake of the Vikings. And as has been noted, we have an asset here that's publicly owned. Correct?
That's correct.
The taxpayers have, over a period of time, the last 25 years, have invested a lot of money into this facility, built and paid for the facility, and have an asset that's worth a lot today. Obviously, even the bare land is worth is worth a lot. And what we have facing us right now is an asset that's under threat. Two of the major tenants of this facility are going to be gone. And we've got the possibility of the other tenant not continuing to beyond 2011. And so I think we need to look at this from the perspective that the public already has a huge investment here. We need to protect this asset. And that's why I asked the question about going forward, if we were to do something here, who's going to own this, and how can we protect this asset going forward?
Madam Chair, this gentleman, that's an excellent question. The Metrodome costs about $13 million a year to operate, real high utility costs. But we don't, as exists today, the debt is paid off. There's no debt left on the facility. So that's we need to get enough money from our operations and the various tenants to cash flow that $13 million plus any capital improvements. There's no outside public source that feeds in regular goods. With the Princeton, if cash flow is fine. With the Gophers on, it cash flow is fine. With the Vikings on, it does not cash flow. There's about roughly a four to six million dollar shortfall in operating the facility. If we follow the route that many other communities did, Seattle, I'll use as an example, they tore down. They built a new single-purpose baseball, new single-purpose football, both open air. They're no longer in the market for events that require retractable roof, climate-controlled facilities, and they've gone out of the business. They don't compete for Final Four. Pontiac Silverdome, like that, just closed. And then you can turn the land around. It's in a good location. Depending on its eventual use, it'll have some value. But you get out of what you lose is the possibility of being a significant signature community that can compete for events that are national and international in stature. So it is the way you're looking at it is important, because it isn't as if the alternative is the status quo. We will not be able to continue operating if the Vikings are not there. If they're playing in some other site, that is not going to be an option if we cannot cash flow it. So we could limp along for a couple of years with the reserves that are there, but in the end, it probably would be torn down, because you can't keep it operating without a major significant tenant.
Madam Chair, I just think we need to keep that in mind as we consider this going forward, that the public is already invested here heavily, and we need to protect that asset going forward. And so I look forward to our trying to figure out how we can protect that asset going forward. Thank you.
Mr. Former Senator Terwilliger, I guess you, who are you now, Chair Terwilliger? You know, just a follow-up to Representative Lanning's question, the public asset that we should protect. Well, maybe it's not a question for you. Maybe it's a question for Mr. Bagley. You know, I'm sure you are aware that there are still a lot of, there's a lot of ill will amongst legislators over what happened with the Twins. And I think most legislators who are not freshmen have it emblazoned in their mind exactly who voted yes and no, with or without a referendum, and with a few extensions in Hennepin, Hennepin legislators on the whole feel that what was done was a great unfairness to have a Minnesota asset paid for by a portion of Minnesota. Will the Vikings be trying to do that? Or will the Vikings, you know, kind of take Representative Lanning's argument here and say, it's something worth preserving, it's our thing, and really have all Minnesotans pay for this if that's really something that those who believe we should be doing. What's the approach with the Vikings coming forward?
Madam Chair, if I could interject here.
Sure.
And as Representative Lane pointed out, it is a public investment we already have. As I started my comments out, this is a facility that is a public multi-use facility now, and the desire is to reinvest to keep that in that capacity. The Vikings are our major tenant, obviously very important because they provide a great deal of cash flow in the current facility, and they would certainly do that in the future. But I think it's important that we do keep in mind is that this is a statewide asset. The facility is, the Vikings are as well a statewide asset. But we need to be looking at this rather unique partnership as we go forward. How do we maximize that? And what we're attempting to do by starting out with our conversation, not only with the Senate Tax Committee, but with you, and then expanding it out to a listening tour around the state, is to be able to bring people to understand exactly what it does bring to the table, what kind of a value it really does add to the quality of life in Minnesota, as well as all the things that we need to do to maintain a venue for other things, whether it be the Cook County Vikings coming down to play in the state championship, or whether it be a team from Argyle being here, or whether it be the Hmong New Year. We have a real need here to look at that. It is not a facility that is strictly Hennepin County, City of Minneapolis. It's a regional, multi-state type of a facility, and therefore we need to be looking at all that, and that's why we're looking for everybody's input as we proceed to how this occurs.
Mr. Chair Terwilliger, but I wasn't asking about input, I was asking about money. So will you be looking for statewide financing? That's the question I was asking.
Madam
Chair.
Input
is great. We get a lot of that here.
Madam Chair, I think we had statewide financing in other facilities. I think we are looking at there will be a partnership, public-private partnership, that will include statewide financing of some form.
Okay. Thank you for that. And Mr. Bagley?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think just to answer your question, I think, and Mr. Chair Terwilliger outlined it, that it's kind of the beginning of the discussion. We need to get into that issue and discuss the statewide benefit of the proposal that's been laid out. But one of the tremendous opportunities that I feel that we have in this situation is the fact that our owners are real estate developers and that they are not intimidated by levels of dollars of investing in the project, not just the public-private partnership of the stadium, but in the broader economic development and in our state's economy. So it makes sense for us, and I think if you look at previous discussions and what the World Ownership has put on the table in the Anoka discussion and in previous discussions about the level of investment they're willing to make, I think is there for real, and I think we should take advantage of that and try to move the discussion forward. And again, the approach to the problem is an investment approach, trying to make this make the best decision for the state of Minnesota as well as the Vikings and our fans.
Thank you, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually, that was one of the items on my list, was the venue that this is for amateur sports as well. And I want to applaud the Sports Facilities Commission on that note. Aside from the Twins and the Vikes and the I don't know how many hundreds of events are held here, but I appreciate that there's that folks take that into account. And I was wondering, you answered the very question, if we lose the Vikes, does it cash flow? And I suspect that it didn't. But when this committee talks about, and I suspect it's before the tax committee, because generally when we start talking about these issues, we're talking about potential tax breaks or different tax treatment or application of taxes to different items. It generally goes hand in hand with the jobs or the economic development that would be created. Do you have a sense right now for the number of jobs that are directly or indirectly related to the Metrodome and I assume that those would transfer to whatever new facility there would be. And if there wasn't a new facility, I assume those jobs go away. And maybe you do or don't know what the sort of construction jobs might be created, at least for a 2 or 2.5 year period.
Madam Chair, I don't have the breakdown now. Of course, there are a number of categories. There are part-time, and there are hundreds and hundreds of part-time, maybe 1,100 that will work a Vikings game, working variously for the Vikings or other entities such as the Commission. And then there are about 40 full-time. That's just to operate the stadium as it is today. A new stadium will be somewhat different. It would cost in the area of $13 to $15 million a year to operate a closed, retractable roof climate control facility. A lot of those jobs would transfer to the new facility if you had that, obviously, and if the facility's not there, those jobs would go away. Construction jobs are, we haven't done that on this thing, but that's obviously an information piece that you have to develop, and we will develop that.
Madam Chair, just one other question. I note that there's been a number of new football stadiums built in the last 5-6 years. One thing I noticed that how long these stadiums last relative to baseball stadiums. You get baseball stadiums that have been around for 80-90 years. That doesn't seem to be the same case with football stadiums. Is it the new breed? Is it anticipated that they will have some sense of tradition or something that keeps them? This actually has a finance component, which is I'm wondering about useful life and the finance, how long you finance these sorts of this sort of construction over, and how long you amortize it. Because I assume it's traditional, do it over 20 years or something like that. But I'm curious if you can, if you've got a stadium that's going to last 30, 40, 50 years. If the amortization schedule might be more appropriate to base it on that useful life. What's the useful life?
Madam Chair, Representative, again, Craig Skine. I think a couple of things. One, obviously, there are several older baseball stadiums that have been around for a long, long time that you referred to, and football in some sense, I won't say it's newer, but certainly its expansion has been more recent. Largely, though, when you look at these facilities, whether they were a day old or they were, 40 years old, really what it came down to is the components of those facilities. What are the economic generators in those facilities? How are the seats laid out? How are the club seats laid out? How are the suites laid out? How do the concourses work? What's the experience for the fan? What are all those types of things? And that's what the new modern era of stadiums in baseball and football have accomplished. And that's why you also see the move back to single sport venues versus the dual venues. So it's all about that experience, all about the fan, all about revenue generation, and all those economic components of these facilities. So I think the short answer is all of these facilities have been built. Baseball, football, NBA, NHL, all are addressing those same components, and all of those facilities all have those same new attributes. Right now, we don't know what the next one is, but there really doesn't seem to be anything right now that people are looking at. Stadiums that were designed a few years ago have those same components that are the ones being generated now. Now, obviously, designs have refined and things like that, but those major economic generators are still there. So certainly it's anticipated that most of these facilities will be very long-term facilities. Most of the leases are 25, 30-year, 35-year type leases. So that's the economics that one would expect in the life cycle that one would have in almost all of these venues.
Representative?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Representative
Earhart. Thank you. A couple of questions, Madam Chair. Weren't there private bonds of some sort in the original facility here, or am I thinking of Bloomington? There were some. I worked for Pugline. He owned some share, something or other. No?
I'm sorry, repeat the question.
Well, weren't there private bonds purchased either for this facility or the Bloomington facility at one time? Isn't that how you financed a lot of it to begin with?
Mr. Lester.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, there were Series D bonds sold, and they were made available to the public, and they were the differentiation between one that actually paid a return versus the
worst.
And these Series D actually did pay a return, was below market return, and then also when they got into the playoffs, you were entitled to purchase playoff tickets, so they attached some value to them. Okay. Those were all retired
probably in the late 80s, early 90s. But there were, your memory's correct.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, I had a note here, a passing thought for Representative Rod. If you're asking about the matching money for stadium purposes, the U.S. Department of Transportation has great matching grant monies for states if they raised enough money themselves through the gas tax and that sort of thing. And that's always available if you have the money. What I was going to ask you, doesn't Senator Bach live in Cook County close? Well, this is a question for staff, I think. Do you think there's enough of a sales tax base in Cook County to handle this?
Mr. Michael, want to answer?
Madam Chair, I think in the Senate bill they have a local sales tax for Cook County, but I think Senator Bach has a different mind in his for the proceeds of that tax.
Yes.
Thank you.
Let's see. And Representative Earhart, you never miss a beat. You're never going to let that gas tax go, so that's good. That's good. And I share your view on that, but we all, no matter how we feel on the gas tax, we share that you never stop advocating, so we're impressed by your diligence. And, you know, I do, Representative Dabney has the next question, but I do want to say on, the issue of the, sales tax question that Representative Earhart has raised. I mean, you know, we understand that there are counties that cannot ever look at these sorts of projects because they just don't have the net tax capacity. But Representative Earhart also understands that asking people to participate statewide means that those who do not have that net tax capacity actually participate very, very little. And if you had something paid for statewide, you'd still take 70% of the money out of the metro and you'd still take the majority of that out of Hennepin County. So I would just ask you all as you come forward next year, which is my understanding, if I understand this, and I have not met with any of you, so this is not from you, or anybody who might think it is, I have not met with anybody related to the Vikings at all this year. My understanding is you'll have an author, you'll have a bill, you have an idea, you maybe have a host community. I would really encourage you to take a statewide approach, and if you, no matter what you do, I hope you will just be honest and forthright with all members of the tax committee. I think it's very difficult when people sort of have their positions staked out and people have different amounts of information in the tax committee, and we've watched that play out in stadium debates, and it's complicated, and so I understand how that all works, but I anticipate having a good working relationship with all of you, even though I'm an opponent of these sorts of subsidies, but as we can all share information and be honest about this process, we'll see if legislators in the future want to go there and if their voters think they should. But I do think it's important that we all receive lots of information, not just people who support these projects, and I would ask you to do that and then try to take the statewide approach to the best of your ability. Representative Dabney.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Question for Chair Terwilliger. When I came back in the room, you and the Chair were in a dialogue about whether the Vikings were going to be asking for state assistance or not, and you identified that they were. Having lived through the Twin Stadiums debate, the struggle for me is that balance between public investment and public return. And I recognize that there is an economic benefit to Major League sports. However, most of that benefit, overwhelmingly that benefit, is in the intangible area. Entertainment dollars are fungible. If the Wild or the Twins or the Vikings or whomever were to disappear overnight, while there would be some disruption in the local economy, people would stop dropping a chunk of change on a sports event and instead would drop it someplace else. You've identified the desire of the team to receive public subsidy. Is there an intent on the part of the team then for the public to also share in the revenue?
Madam Chair, Representative, that is, we've not had that discussion. I think that is probably the subject that needs to get into in the financing you're talking about. Some of the similar things that went on in the discussions on the Twin Stadium, I recognize. If I could make one comment about entertainment dollars being fungible. I have been around this for a good number of years, the stadiums when I was here, and was either author or co-author of, I think, nearly every bill. And I contend then, and I still contend, that's true to some point. However, and you're correct, I believe, and I certainly agree with you on a lot of the benefit here being intangible. But there, and I don't want to go into my log cabin story about how I grew up in South Dakota, but
let me just
the legislature isn't doing anything better than listening to log cabin stories right about. But my comment being that, this is a regional attraction. Yeah. Professional sports is a regional attraction. People come from the Dakotas, they come from Montana, they come from Iowa and wherever else. There's a good number of those people that would come here that spend dollars in hotels, motels, restaurants, shopping centers and such, that wouldn't come here were it not for the attraction of the facility. Now, I realize that I would get great contradiction from Art Willemick at the Federal Reserve Bank, who continues to make this comment. And I realize they're also not good at definitive studies. However, in my experience, having grown up a good distance away and having family and such from outstate as well as from out of state, they would not be coming here if it was not for the fact that they're coming for the Major League Entertainment. They would not say, well, I'm going to go to the Guthrie tonight instead of, I decided that the Twins, the Vikings aren't there, so I guess I'll go over and go to the Penumbra Theater. They're not going to do that. Therefore, those other facilities are not going to be receiving the funds that come from them as well. So I don't think it necessarily is totally accurate to say that they all would be fungible and go to the other one. Thank you.
Further questions? Anyone else would like to testify or tell us what's on your mind out there? Otherwise, we are... done.
Madam Chair, before you adjourn,
yes.
Let me again, particularly in view of the tightness of your schedule and the long hours you've been putting towards a lot of really important questions, let me, on behalf of all of us from the Sports Facilities Commission and certainly I know from the Vikings and such, express your deep appreciation for taking the time and for helping us to begin this dialogue. We look forward to continuing that, and I want to assure you that we will be honest and open, and that's the purpose of trying to approach it the way we're trying to go.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you all for coming, and if we are adjourned. Thank you.